This episode is brought to you by Graybar. Graybar is a trusted and leading North American distributor of electrical, communications, data networking, and industrial products that supports projects of any industry. Construction, hospitals, industrial plants, schooling, and more. Yep, Graybar does that. Graybar operates with one clear mission: to serve as the vital link in the supply chain, adding value for customers and suppliers with innovative solutions and services. But here's what makes them different from the competition: being able to effectively navigate supply chains to get products on site and on time is crucial these days. And Graybar's nationwide logistics network, with over 290 locations across the country, assists owners and professionals build and maintain the operations in their electrical, communications, and industrial world by providing them what they need, when and where they need it, and within budget. Yep, Graybar does that. To view more information on their services, head to graybar.com. That's graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that. This episode is brought to you by Indeed, a company driven by the search for better. Because when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search, but to match. Think about the time and energy you've put into finding the best candidate for an opening you have. But it's more than finding someone. You want to match all the candidates to your needs. So ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with the right candidates faster. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. And Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And here's how to get your openings more visibility. Because you're a Golf Smarter listener, you get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/GolfSmarter. So go to Indeed.com/GolfSmarter right now and let them know that you heard about Indeed here. That's Indeed.com/GolfSmarter. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.
Golf Smarter, number 673, is brought to you by TGW, the sweetest spot in golf. The 20% off exclusive sale on selected apparel for Golf Smarter listeners is still on, but if you're going to take advantage of this offer, you better log on right now from our link at golfsmarter.com. Or go to tgw.com/golfsmarter, and you'll land on a page that gets you directly to all the sale items being offered. And just on that page alone, you're going to find a wide variety of clothes for both men and women, from discountable pants, skirts, and skorts, talked about skorts, shirts, outerwear, rainwear, belts, underwear, headwear, socks, and on and on and on. You really got to check it out, because the savings on that page alone, everything is discounted, but then the exclusive Golf Smarter 20% off apparel sale adds greater discount. Now, that sale ends February 5th, 2019 at 11:59 p.m. Central Time. Of course, some exclusions apply, nor can this discount be combined with other discount offers. And due to manufacturer policies, some other items may also be included. And this includes all Titleist, FootJoy, Under Armour items, and select Nike items. So, to see all the apparel that qualify for our 20% off sale, go to tgw.com/golfsmarter. Again, that's tgw.com/golfsmarter, or click on the link in today's show notes or their ad at golfsmarter.com. New Golf Rules Part 2. Now we know how and why, let's hear what they are with Joe Foley of the USGA.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Joe.
Happy to be back, Fred.
Thank you so much for sticking around, because we recorded last week. We got to know the who and the why and the how of the new rules for 2019, and the global rules for 2019. So no matter where you play in the world, you're going to be following the same rules finally.
That's right.
That's pretty awesome. Is that a major thing? I mean, like, did everyone just like go, okay, good, this globalization at best?
Yeah, as we talked about last episode, we've had a single set of rules for several decades now, but we kind of continuously get that question, and I think the more and more we can get the word out that the RNA and the USGA work together on one set of rules, and while the RNA governs the game outside of the U.S. and the U.S. governs the game inside the U.S., we're still playing by the same set of rules. I think that's super helpful. No matter where you are, to just know that that you are, you know, whether you pick up a ball and tee it up in China or tee it up here in L.A. or L.A. or New York, you're gonna be playing by the same set.
Okay, so let's get into it. Where would you like to start if I just ask the blanket question of what are the new rules, Joe?
Well, I would start by saying that there's roughly 20 to 25 major changes. And that really represents the largest overhaul we've ever had of the rules of golf. We've reorganized the book before. We've made some pretty big change, but to sit here and say that we have, you know, 25 to 30 really big changes, that's never been said before. And I would say that, you know, there are some overarching themes, right? So without getting into the details of every single one of those 25 to 30.
We've got time.
There are a lot of, yeah, okay, we can get into whatever you want to. But I would say the first theme is that there's been sort of an elimination of a lot of one-stroke penalties that, you know, we previously had in the rule book, and you know, the player by doing it wasn't really sort of gaining a significant advantage, and you saw players run into issues out there on the course where they did something that wasn't intentional, or it didn't really increase or give them a great advantage on the golf course, and they were being penalized. So I'll start with a couple of them. You think about what you do in a water hazard today. Well, you can't move loose impediments. You can't ground your club. Same thing in a bunker. You can't move loose impediments. We basically just eliminated all those restrictions and said, look, the challenge of playing out of a hazard is the fact that, you know, you're probably playing out of water or you're playing out of high grass. And why are we restricting someone from being able to move a loose impediment or ground their club? Now, some would say that, you know, they're in a hazard, so they should be restricted. But we often saw people get penalized by moving these things or grounding their club and still having to have a difficult shot out of the hazard. And so if the challenge is really to play out of the hazard, why are we going to sort of, add additional penalties to add insult to injury, if you will, when someone's already in a difficult situation? So that's one example. You know, now you aren't penalized for moving loose impediments in a hazard or grounding your club, and same thing in a bunker. You can't ground your club in a bunker if you're sort of close to your ball. So that idea of hovering the club above the sand is still going to be something that's required of the player, but certainly moving loose impediments in a bunker is going to be okay. Some of the other penalties we've eliminated.
Well, let me stop you for a second, Joe, because I want to talk about the grinding your club in a bunker. Take me through that a little bit more. I understand that you can't get your club. Your club has to be elevated before you take your swing. But what if you're taking practice swings in the bunker? Can you then touch the sand at that point if you're like standing away from the ball?
No. And one of the reasons we couldn't get to that position, Fred, was because A, you're now, from a course conditioning perspective, perhaps going to have sand being deposited outside of the bunkers and an issue for the greenkeepers or superintendents around the world. That's one thought. But the other thought is that, you know, part of the challenge of playing out of a bunker is the fact that you are playing out of sand, and we wanted to sort of maintain that. So by that, I mean, you know, we weren't going to go as far as to let people just start testing the condition. And by swinging in a bunker and testing out the condition of that sand, you're now sort of gathering information about what that shot will be. That challenge that you have from playing out of the sand is sort of decreased. So what we're doing is we are still maintaining this idea that, you know, if you are in a bunker, you can't, you know, ground your club close to your ball or take a practice swing. That said, if you are not near your ball and you brush the sand with your club or you drop your club or you're not anywhere near your ball and you're not taking a practice swing, but you accidentally ground your club, you know, currently you are going to be penalized, but in the future, we're not going to penalize you there. So it's a little bit tough to work through in that, you know, you can ground your club sometimes in a bunker and sometimes not. But I would just largely say the overarching point here is that you don't want to still be grounding your club in a bunker. However, in a water hazard, we're not going to have an issue with it. Go right ahead.
Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
If you're in the water, yeah, sure. Just roll up, pull off your shoes and yeah, go for it. Let everyone laugh at you because you're going to end up on YouTube anyway. Is it illegal to... okay, my ball's right in the middle of the bunker, and it's a large bunker, and it's great sand. They just, you know, fixed all the new sand. Can I take the rake and throw it into the bunker near where the ball is so that I have the rake with me after I take my shot?
Yeah, not a problem. And actually, under the current rules, you're okay there as well. You're...
That's not testing the sand because, you know, you want to see how it lands when you throw it in.
Well, look, if you're doing it with that intent, then you're going to have a problem.
Oh, yeah, but there's nothing about intent in the rules, is there?
Well, sometimes, especially with issues like this, with testing the condition of the sand, we would want to know why you're doing that. But again, the casual act of just, you know, grabbing the rake, heading into the bunker, dropping it right next to you, you know, it's not an issue. It's not an issue today, and it's not going to be an issue in 2019.
I just hope that when I toss that rake in, my friend doesn't say, "Excuse me, what was your intent for that?" What, my what? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's fair. It seems like a minor thing, you know, minor change, but it's a change.
Yeah, and I'll just finish my point about elimination of penalties. So that was just one part, but you know, there's a couple other places where you go if you accidentally strike your ball more than once, right? Like a double hit. Right now we're gonna actually give you two strokes there. We're gonna take one away in the future, right? If you accidentally move your ball when you're searching for your ball, right now you're going to be penalized, but in the future you're not. If you hit your ball and it accidentally deflects off your equipment or yourself, you know, there's a penalty today and there's not going to be a penalty tomorrow. So I don't think any of those changes are huge. And in fact, I would actually talk about a few other changes that are bigger, but I wanted to just mention that theme of us trying to eliminate as many sort of these penalties where a player is just not really doing anything wrong and they're getting penalized. You know, it just wasn't sort of a fair way to assess penalties in the past.
Oh, okay. So like if you're hitting just a little chip shot and it's happened to all of us, the ball hits the club face twice, there's no penalty on that anymore.
Correct. Yep.
Oh,
I mean,
awesome.
Look, it's probably not going to end up in a great spot anyways, right? but let's charge the player for the stroke he made or she made. And then, you know, from there, you know, the player will just play from where the ball came to rest and, no additional penalty for that.
Let's talk about losing the ball.
Yeah, losing the ball, there's a lot of changes going on here. 5 minutes to 3 minutes is the search time, right? So in the past, today, you have 3 minutes, five minutes to search for your ball. In the future, you only have three. And so who knows? I mean, we're not quite sure exactly how much that'll impact pace of play. But we think that it might benefit groups at least a little bit to prevent those searches from going from all the way up to 5 minutes. I think the other thing I would say, and this is going to be a local rule, so just to note for your audience, it's not going to be necessarily a rule that's in place at every single course you play or at every tournament you play, especially at the highest level. But for a lost ball, we do have a new local rule if the course decides to use it, where if you lose your ball and you haven't played a provisional ball, you don't have to go back to the tee. You can actually drop a ball near where you lost your ball. You can actually drop a ball in the closest fairway point, really the closest fairway place to where you lost your ball, and drop a ball. It's penal. I mean, it's still a two-stroke penalty. We're not going to kind of reduce the penalty for a lost ball. But what we're going to do here is we're going to prevent someone from going back to the tee to have to play another ball if they've lost a ball and haven't played a provisional ball. So
this is stroke and distance,
two
right?
Main changes with lost ball. Excuse me.
Is this reference to stroke and distance? Is that
correct? Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So I'm jumping around a little bit, but in terms of the lost ball rules, again, I think it's the 5 minutes to 3 minutes change, and then it's the introduction of this new local rule that really will hopefully speed up play, especially at public golf courses on a weekend where, you know, folks are already doing that, right, Fred? I mean, folks are already just dropping a ball and playing. So, That's true. That's true. But we think that if they do it and they know they can play by the rules, that if they're taking two strokes, then you know, that they'll use that local rule more frequently than, you know, than they would go back to the tee or just play under one stroke penalty.
Does this eliminate provisional though? I mean, if it's like, you know, I think it went through the fence. It may have hit the fence and stopped. So I'm going to hit a provisional, but if I find my first ball, fine. But if I know it's out, I just don't need to. I'll just take the two strokes and go up there. But so what happens to a provisional?
It's up to the player, right? So the player still has the option to hit the provisional.
Okay.
You know, for example, if you've hit it way right or left, you know, you may have only hit it 100 yards off the tee if it hit a tree. You might be better off hitting a provisional in that case. But if you've hit your ball up there pretty far and, you know, you're just not quite sure and you say, I'll just go up and look. That's the case where, you know, you can come back to tee if you want, but you don't have to hit a provisional. You can just play under the local rule. So it's really the player will have options. The only thing I will say is if you play a provisional ball, you don't have that option to use this local rule once you get up there. You would have to use that provisional ball that you've hit out there.
I would like to suggest a rule that the people who spend time looking for balls, even though they're not looking for theirs, they're just looking for free golf balls. The amount of time they spend looking for golf balls, they have to put an equal amount of time into fixing divots on the green.
I like that rule.
Oh, good.
We should consider that for the next go round of the rules change process.
Can we call it the Fred rule?
Well, no rules in the book are named after anyone. That would be the first of its kind. But
I think calling it golf smarter just makes it better. It's just a better way to do it.
No, it's important. It's an important part of playing the game, right? I think everyone would agree that, you know, it's better to leave the course in better shape than you had it when you were playing it. So, good piece of feedback and advice.
Thank you very much. You said that it's a new local rule about the provisional needed, no provisional needed, two stroke penalty. So I'm not sure what I understand about local rules. Is now are we getting into bifurcation? Now are we getting into separate sets of rules for different places?
Well, I'm glad you asked it, because this, if there's anywhere in the rule, Fred, in the rule book, Fred, where we have sort of given a rule to the casual and recreational player that we wouldn't expect a professional player or a committee at the highest level of the game to use, it's with this rule. And I think the reason we did it was because we see so much value for the kind of recreational golf community. There's still some pushback on the rule overall at the committee level, because, you know, there's a lot of things that need to go into the way the rule is sort of applied, meaning, you know, if someone's in the final round of the U.S. Open and they're, you know, having to estimate where they lost their ball on the final hole or estimate where the ball went out of bounds, There's just some hesitation that we should be using a local rule of this nature at the highest level for some of those reasons. I mean, you think about like two players kind of getting into an argument about where the ball was lost, and I think that that's something that you know, down the road, who knows, we may consider making it a rule for everyone. But at this point, we were really only comfortable kind of giving the option to the players who play by this anyways, who will really not be gaining any sort of advantage. They'll be able to drop the ball in the fairway and keep playing under a two-stroke penalty. Let's see how it works with the casual and recreational game, and from there, you know, who knows where we go with it down the road.
This episode is brought to you by Putter Cup. More than a training aid, it's a skill enhancer. Visit puttercupgolf.com and use the code GOLFSMARTER to get 20% off your order. Now, let me explain. We've discussed many training aids on this podcast, and frankly, there have been a lot that have crossed my desk that you never heard me talk about, either because I didn't get it or I thought it wasn't worth your time. But Putter Cup is different. After nearly 20 years in the market research industry, Matt Davis, a lifelong golf nut like all of us, had an idea on how he could help every golfer feel more calm and confident when they putt. This isn't a device to improve your mechanics or develop the perfect stroke. Putter Cup is designed to strengthen your focus and reduce distracting thoughts while you're putting. How? Putter cups are golf hole inserts that encourage golfers to focus on the putting essentials of speed and aim. They're lightweight and easily fit into your bag, so you can fine-tune your focus before every round and at every practice session. Putter cup gives you instant feedback, so it's easy to get dialed in quickly and feel confident as you head to the first tee. You've got to check it out for yourself. Go to puttercupgolf.com and use code GOLFSMARTER to get 20% off your order. And combined with the 15% discount you get with the pressure putt combo, you really save. And the pressure putt combo includes both the speed bump and the center cup, two very different but very valuable skill enhancers. That's puttercupgolf.com and get 20% off your next order with promo code GOLFSMARTER. This episode is brought to you by Modern Mammals, a company that creates new hair washing products for men. Visit modernmammals.com and use code GOLFSMARTER for 10% off. I'm a guy. I get it. Once you find a product you like, especially hair care products, you think, that's it. I'm not changing. Why would I? This works fine. Really? Fine? When is fine good enough in your life, your work, your game? Unlike the shampoo you've been using forever, Modern Mammals products don't have harsh detergents that suds up and dry out your head and hair. And unlike conditioners, they don't leave your hair limp and frizzy. Instead, they lightly clean your hair and scalp, cleansing your hair while protecting its strength and texture. But let's get back to you. Have you ever really cared about what you put in your hair? Probably not. But that's why you need to visit modernmammals.com and read the reviews that prove how well it works. And while you're there, use code GOLFSMARTER at checkout for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with the promo code GOLFSMARTER. That way, they knew we sent you.
As long as I've been doing this podcast, it seems what has come out of the golf industry has been the problems with golf are it's too hard, it takes too long, and it's too expensive. How many of these rules were used as the markers to say we need to make some changes?
I love that question. And I think we just talked about one of them, right? Pace of play, especially at the recreational level, will be, we think, pace will become better, right? If people start using that local rule, I would also say that if you think about, you know, the change with the flagstick rule, you know, allowing player to leave it in as opposed to having to walk all the way up there and go back to their ball and you know, if they don't have someone there nearby to help them out, that's another place. The 5 minutes to 3 minutes, we don't know exactly how this is going to impact pace of play. I mean, the changes, we need to still go into effect, and so we'll get that data once they do go into effect. But I would say that a large number of the changes had sort of the larger initiatives in mind, such as place of play, such as environmental stewardship, thinking about, how we can make the game a little bit more approachable and less stodgy. That's less about the rules themselves, but more about how they're written and how they're delivered through the book itself and through the mobile app, right? So I think the whole point of this is, Fred, is that we're not going to necessarily, change the way the game is played completely. We're not going to welcome thousands and thousands or millions and millions of more golfers because of these new rules. But we hope that the changes, both in the way they're delivered and written and the way they actually operate, will make the game at least a little bit more approachable. And some of those things you were talking about earlier, just a little bit, a little bit less stodgy, a little bit less uptight and elitist. And if we can do that, I think we've sort of achieved at least one of our goals with this project.
You've said approachable twice. You said less stodgy, less elitist. Is that your way of avoiding the word make the game easier?
You approach the pace of play. Yeah. I mean, it's a good question, but it's going to be hard either way, Fred, right? I mean,
yeah, of course.
Unless we literally change the size of the hole and make the clubs and change the way clubs are manufactured, where the ball doesn't turn at all once it's struck, it just goes straight every time, right? Unless we tangibly change the way someone actually plays the game, it's always going to be a hard game, right?
That's the point of it, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's part of the joy of it, in that it is a struggle, right? I mean, golfers are crazy because we keep going back to it, even though we don't play well every time. I use those words intentionally, but I definitely avoid easier, because we definitely don't think the game of golf is going to become easier per se because of these changes.
Okay. Let's get back to the flagstick. I have another question about that. The whole thing in before 2019. Was I'm putting from the fringe, or I'm putting from the first, the second cut there, tend or pool. It's like, nope, you have to leave it in while I'm off the green, and you can tend it, or if the green is huge and you're really far away, tend it for me. Mm-hmm. Where does that fall anymore? What are the rules? Can the flag? You were saying the flag can be in while somebody's putting.
Yep.
That's okay. But what about off the green and whatnot? Where are the rules go for that?
Yeah, good question. I think the easy answer here is that pretty much everything you can do now with a flagstick off the green remains the same. When you're off the green and the flagstick's in, or the flagstick's out, all of that's going to stay the same. So basically, right now, when you're off the green and you're playing a stroke, that flagstick can be removed, it can be attended, or it can stay in the hole. That's all staying the same. Now, the change is really when you're on the green.
And that's the player's decision, right?
Correct.
Okay.
It's solely the player's decision. Mm-hmm. Got to make that decision before you make the stroke, right? You can't have that flagstick attended sort of halfway there, I'll pull the flagstick type thing.
No. Oh, my God, I hit the ball too hard. Put the stick back in.
Yeah. No, not able to do that, But on the green is where it's changed, right? So right now, if you are putting and you strike a flagstick, that's in the hole that hasn't been removed, if you're playing in stroke play, it's a two-stroke penalty. If you're playing in match play, it's a loss of hole penalty. If you didn't strike the flagstick on your putt, you're not penalized. But every time someone makes a stroke with that flagstick in, they're taking the risk, if their ball does strike the flagstick, that they're going to incur that penalty. So the change really is that we're removing the penalty. Basically,
yeah.
We're saying that penalty for it striking an unattended flagstick in the hole, just sitting there, is no longer in play. There's no more penalty. So what that does is that opens up the option for a player to not worry about any risk he has of getting a penalty. He or she can just leave that flagstick in, can make sort of a strategic decision about it, right? I think it might help me. I have a 3-footer. It's down the hill, and I want to hit it pretty hard. I want to hit it right up against the flagstick. I'm going to leave it in. Or perhaps for pace of play reasons, I mentioned it earlier, but if you, let's say you're playing with a player in your group, you have a partner who's maybe just made a stroke from the bunker and he's still raking the bunker and you're on the green 40 feet away, knowing you want to pull the flagstick, you don't need it tended, but nobody's there to pull it for you or tend it for you. And so you kind of have to, you know, walk all the way up to the hole and pull the flagstick and then walk back to your ball and make another stroke from there. That takes time. And so, you know, why not just putt with it in, right? Why not let that player putt with it in without any sort of risk of a penalty? So, again, whether it's strategic or it's a pace of play, a reason that someone would leave the flagstick in, they're going to be able to do that in 2019 and beyond.
So I really like the idea of cutting down the amount of time you can search for the ball from 5 minutes to 3 minutes, but I have a suggestion on how to make it even shorter.
Shorten it to 2 minutes?
No, not even. Forget the minutes part. It's about marshals.
Okay.
I really have a problem with marshals who are just coming, who are just driving around in their little carts and coming up to going, you guys have got to pick up the pace of play. Well, then why don't you do this, yeah. Mr. Marshal? Why don't you park your golf cart over, you know, out on the fairway and then watch us hit the ball. And if one of us hits the ball, take a little flag out of your cart and mark the ball for us. If you're sitting right there, you know where it went, then we don't have to spend 3 to 5 minutes looking for the ball if you're helping us. Just, okay, I'm whining.
It's okay. It's a good point. I mean, you know, I think from every facility is a little different, as you know, right? So,
yeah.
You know, the sort of the capacity that people would have to implement that could be tough, but I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah. 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 Just these guys who just drive around all day just so they can get free golf make me crazy. Cause I am playing at a pace that I'm comfortable with. And just cause we lost balls on this hole, all three of us or three out of four of us. All right. Next rule. You got more. I'm sure you have more.
Yeah. Let's see. Where could we go now? I would say that there's been some changes to the putting green rules as sort of a segue from the flagstick change. There's been a few more changes on the putting green. So a small one I'll touch on quickly. You know, right now when you're sort of pointing out a line, whether it's your caddy or your partner out there, you know, you're hovering your putter over the line. You're not supposed to touch the ground. But what's really the improvement that you've gathered by touching the ground? How is that going to make it any better for you, right? So we still have a rule that'll, you know, prevent you from improving your line. But if someone just wants to show you the line, right now they have to hover their club over the ground. Let's just let them point out a line by touching the ground, right? Touching the putting green. So small change there. But that gets to my larger change of what you can repair on the green. Right now you are sort of restricted by only being able to repair ball marks and old hole plugs. But in the future, we're basically going to let you repair any damage, any damage that has been caused by something that is, you know, a human being or an animal. If it's natural damage, we're going to have you keep it there. But so spike marks or any sort of indentations from footprints. Right now, you know, it's kind of odd. We basically say, you know, you have to put the ball on the ground to get it in the hole, right? So it's the final round of a big match, and I have damage in my line, Fred, and you have damage in your line, and my damage is a ball mark, and your damage is a spike mark, and I'm able to repair my damage, and you're not, so you have to putt right through that spike mark and try to make that putt by keeping your ball on the ground and navigating it past that spike mark. That's unfair, right? That's not you know, we don't think that that's a fair outcome. So again, I would say one of the bigger changes on the putting green is the fact that you can repair almost all damage going forward.
Awesome, I like that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Now people have asked about sort of what does it mean though if someone wants to repair more than just damage? Maybe they want to create a trough between their ball and the hole and sort of make an avenue for the ball to carry on to get into the hole. I mean, we've heard that question now that we've released this proposed change, and now it is going to be a change. Like, well, I'm going to start tapping down everything and making it easier to make a putt. look, we're going to let you repair the damage, but we're not going to let you sort of improve your line. Sure. That's still going to be something that you can't do. You can repair the damage, but any sort of improvement beyond that is not going to be allowed.
What do you mean by natural damage? I mean, you know, you talked about ball marks and spike marks. When who wears spikes anymore?
Yep.
What do you mean by natural damage?
Natural damage would be sort of discolorations or inconsistencies between grasses. Maybe there's something that took place out there on the course that occurred naturally. So maybe it has to do with sort of the rainwater or water that was on the green that, again, maybe made an indentation or, again, maybe made some inconsistencies between parts of the green, parts of the grasses that are growing a little bit more in full, as opposed to other parts of the grasses on the green that aren't. There's probably not very many examples, and I'm not using very good ones there.
Yeah.
But if it's natural, and we think that'll be pretty clear if it's natural. If it's not something that's been ticked up by someone clearly walking on the green, then you should probably avoid repairing it. And it's less about repairing it, but it's more about just modifying it or changing it. You're not really repairing anything at that point. You're actually changing the way the green is being the actual level of the green or the way it's actually sitting naturally.
So if a heavy branch breaks off of a tree, lands on the green and puts a gash in the green, is that a natural damage that I can't repair?
You know, I kind of knew that question was coming.
we've been talking for an hour. You've got me figured out, I think.
Technically it is, but what happens in those cases is if there is a damage, you know, that's a very unique circumstance, but if it did take place, we would encourage the player to notify the committee because, while they're technically not able to repair it because it's natural damage under the rules, the committee could go ahead and repair that or move the whole location or find another way to make sure that people are navigating the hole in a fair way, right? That they don't have to deal with something like that.
Do you have a favorite new rule?
I mean, I love the local rule for an alternative stroke and distance.
Mm-hmm.
I personally love the flagstick rule. I think one of the themes that we haven't talked about a bunch, I mean, I've mentioned pace of play a lot, but I haven't talked about kind of player behavior as it relates to pace of play. And I think that's one of my favorite kind of new themes within the rules. We are not putting any, and this might be my favorite. We're not putting a shot clock on a player per se. We've had a lot of, feedback on that. Well, why don't you force someone to play within a certain amount of time so they're moving through the golf course quicker. There's just too many variables that go on a golf course. There's too many things that could happen that would require someone to change their club or may require a player to play a stroke a little bit slower than his or her opponent or fellow competitor. And for that reason, we didn't put a shot clock in there, but we put a recommended time that someone should play each stroke in. And that would be 40 seconds. So now for the first time in the rules, we're actually saying, we recommend that you play a stroke in 40 seconds or less, emphasizing the or less part. And while that isn't something that's necessarily enforceable, it's a recommendation. A player or a committee couldn't point at that and say, if you go over 40, you're penalized. We think that'll help with the culture of pace of play. That if it's in there and someone's going over 40 seconds pretty often, they're sort of breaching something that's pretty explicit in the rules. So that's in there. And then the other thing I would say is while you hear the term ready golf used a lot in, around golf circles and at clubs and courses, it's never been something we've really referenced in the rules. We've never said, go ahead and play ready golf, but we are going forward. We are going to say that. So, in stroke play, if your fellow competitor is okay with it and you're ready to play and you want to institute ready golf, go right ahead. There's no reason to have to play in order in stroke play when you're playing out there. Now, match play is a little different because there's sort of the strategy involved where the person who's playing further from the hole is still expected to play first because that has to do – I mean, they're very dependent on each other in the match and where someone hits it is actually crucial to the way someone else kind of decides to play the hole strategically. So – in match play, we're not going to permit folks to just play ready golf, but in stroke play, which is the form of play that people, often use out there, go ahead, play ready golf as long as everyone on board and is on board with it in the group that you're playing with.
I can see the 40-second thing being fine when everybody's either at the tee or the fairway or their approach shots. But on the green, when people, can you please stand still? Can you not talk? All those things. At what point does your 40-second clock start? When their ball stops moving? How do you start that clock? And when does it end? When the ball stops moving each time? I don't know.
Yeah, and I think you're hitting on some points, Fred, that were part of the reason why we didn't actually go through with a shot clock, because there are these nuances, right? And each stroke is a little bit different. I mean, if you have a tap in, a 3 to 6 inch putt, you should be expected to play that stroke in much less than 40 seconds, right? You shouldn't take 40 seconds to play that stroke, but
you shouldn't be taking that stroke, but that's my friends and I. 3 to 6 inch putt, pick it up, you're good, let's go. Why are you even making the stroke and worrying about your 40 seconds here? But that's probably not what you guys want to hear.
Well, no, it's okay. I mean, look, you're playing within your group and you're completely entitled to do that. It's more at the kind of the higher level, the more elite, professional level or elite amateur level where, in a stroke play event, you're holding out every putt. And I think the larger point I was trying to make was just that, every stroke's a little bit different. And, so this sort of recommended 40-second time is again, just recommended. And so some strokes, if you have a really long putt, 50, 60, 100-foot putt, where you have to kind of read it from both sides to just to even have a chance to get it close, you might be playing in more than 40 seconds. But other times, you should be playing in way less than 40 seconds. So I don't have a good answer for you on when the clock starts. Hmm. And part of that is because we're not going to have a clock. We're not going to be doing that out there. And you don't have to play within that 40-second time frame. But we're recommending it for folks to just start using that as their barometer, their general barometer for when they when they're playing a stroke.
Okay, that's fair. Are there any of these rules that are, considered outrageous? No. Outlandish? No. Radical change. Are any of these rules you see as a radical change, or are they just modifications?
It depends. I mean, I think if you would talk to some, staunch traditionalists in the rules community, officials and administrators, there'd probably be people who'd get on, who'd answer your question and say, yeah, there are. We think about the dropping procedure, which we haven't talked about at all. I mean, we almost went from dropping from any height. We now drop from shoulder height. We almost went to dropping from any height. And that would have been a big move. So we're pretty close. Now we're at knee height. So just dropping from knee height as opposed to shoulder height. And we can get into that more if you'd like.
But, yes, please. Go ahead.
I'll just elaborate a little bit on that. We're trying to keep the randomness of the drop in play, right? If you're dropping from any height, you're dropping really close to the ground, you could argue that you're almost placing the ball. And so we couldn't quite get all the way to any height, but the knee height will, again, keep the randomness and then allow the ball to not roll as far. And when you drop from shoulder height, that ball can roll pretty far. And that actually is where all these other procedures around the dropping procedure come in. Your ball rolls more than two club lengths, your ball rolls into a hazard, or it rolls closer to the hole. All those times you actually have to redrop. What we're saying now is, look, drop from knee height. You have to get your ball to come to rest in this relief area, which is, one club length wide for, let's say you're taking relief from a cart path, one club length, in sort of radius, right, from where your nearest point of relief is. Get that ball to come to rest, however you have to do it, get that ball to come to rest in that relief area by dropping from knee height. So that's a bit of a change because, in the past you would drop from shoulder height, the ball would roll in a lot of different places, and you'd have to kind of remember when you'd have to redrop. Now we're just saying, here's your relief area. It's one club length wide. If you know, assuming you're dropping with a, you know, from a cart path for free relief, and drop it in that relief area and play on. So that's one rule that I would just say is a rule that we've thought a lot about and talked a lot about. And some would argue we've actually moved in a pretty, we've moved away from the old procedure in a pretty extensive way. The casual golfer probably by the eye wouldn't think that we have, but again, the staunch traditionalist would.
Now, did you guys release these rules to test them? What was in 2017 to see what it felt like, so you can continue to revise them?
Yeah, we did, and we had what was really unprecedented period of feedback. We called it back in the summer of 2017. To really engage with the golf community in a way we've never done before within the rules change process. In March 2017, we released the proposed changes. We had been working on these changes for, you know, the better part of 5-6 years, and we hadn't released anything to the public. And so what we wanted to do was just say, look, we've worked on a lot of these things, but maybe we missed something. Maybe we got something wrong. Maybe something doesn't make sense. Let's share them with the public. And so we had 6 months of feedback. We received over 30,000 pieces of feedback.
Wow.
Formally. And then of course, we had, informal conversations along the way that definitely informed the way we approached the final revisions. And, again, did that over the course of the summer, went from March to August, and then brought all of that input back to the rules review process, in the fall of 2017, which then set us up for releasing the final rules in the spring of this earlier year. So all in all, the feedback process took about a year, and it was great. It was just great to involve the golf community in that process, in a way we never have before. We weren't necessarily crowdsourcing the rules, if you will. It wasn't a democratic process, in that, we were just voting on the rules with the public, but there were a lot of things that were mentioned that made us rethink some of the things we had proposed. And so it was a really healthy dialogue and a pretty cool time to be involved in this whole project.
Are there any rules about that involve the rating and slope of tee boxes and where a player can choose, to play from one, or is he required to play based on an index?
That is another set of rules, and I know we talked about this on the previous episode, but we have a handicap team that writes and governs the game in terms of the rules of handicapping and course rating. And they're actually going through their own process now. They're updating the rules of handicapping to really align all of the different governing handicap governing authorities across the world to be under one system. I talk a lot about how we have one single set of rules, in terms of the playing rules for the game. We don't right now for the rules of handicapping. So one handicap in one country could mean something completely different in another country. Mm-hmm. And so that handicap team right now is going through that whole review process. And in 2020, they're going to release a new set of rules for handicapping that will reflect, a single set of handicapping rules for the world. So to answer your question, we don't have any changes that relate to course rating or the slope of a golf course for these rules, but those changes and modifications would come by the 1st of January in 2020.
Okay. All right. Any other rules you would like to inform us of? Because, we can always download the free USGA rules app for our phones and get everything we need to know, but is there anyone you'd like to talk about anymore?
I mean, I think we covered most of them. I mean, if I was going to go into the more detail, most of the major ones, I would say.
Okay. That's pretty
If
great.
I was going to go into detail on any of the other ones, it would be kind of getting into the minutiae and sort of the inside baseball conversation that might only be something that an official or an administrator would be interested in. But if folks know those rules we just covered, by the time they tee it up next year in 2019, they'll be in good shape to be able to navigate their way around the golf course.
That's awesome. Well, Joe, I really appreciate all the time that you were able to give us to update us on what's going on. This is a very exciting time for you guys, I'm sure, and for all golfers, old and new.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. I think we are in a critical period of time here. We've done a lot of work, but the work is not going to come to fruition and be really, really recognized and appreciated if people aren't hearing about it and learning the new rules. And so, again, I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast with you so we can get the word out about all these changes.
So there you have it. You can probably tell that we recorded these during 2018, but the new rules are in effect. And I'm sure that you've already tried putting with the pin in. But are you really not hitting a second ball from the tee and just taking the two-stroke penalty and dropping it where it went out? Yeah, I'm sure you've got your own rules that you play with your buddies, but just make sure that everyone agrees on the rules before you start, and everyone will be happy. No problem. Now, if you've been listening to Golf Smarter for a couple of years, you may remember in July of 2015, I played in a pro-am for a web.com tour event at TPC Stonebray in Hayward, California. Now, the up-and-coming pro I played with that day was Adam Long. Sound familiar? In the news lately? No, he has not declared his candidacy for president yet. Now, as we publish this episode in January of 2019... I'm very excited because not only did Adam successfully graduate from the minor leagues, web.com, but in only his sixth PGA Tour event down at the Desert Classic this past weekend, Adam sunk a 13-foot putt on the final hole to beat Phil Mickelson, who was leading through the entire event. Every day, Phil was at the top of the leaderboard. But then on Sunday, Adam was part of the threesome that played it out. He was two strokes back. Well, during the round with Adam that I had, I hooked us both up to microphones and carried a camera as well. So if you go into the Golf Smarter archives, you can hear Adam and I as we walked the course together having a conversation, and that's in episode number 498. Plus, the entire thing is also on our youtube.com/golfsmarterTV channel. So I'll leave a link in the show notes for you to see it for yourself. Actually, it's a lot more fun to watch because Adam and I are out on the course and you can see where we were and we talk about it and you can see some of the shots that he takes and you can see his swing. And then if you watched this past weekend, you can see how his swing developed. Anyway, Adam's Twitter handle is, I love this, @alongshot. Perfect, isn't it? And I've already sent him a congratulatory tweet, and you should too. Tell him you'd like to hear from him again on Golf Smarter too. Maybe we'll get a reaction out of that. Now, coming up in the next few weeks, we've got some really interesting guests lined up. Next week, Cary Valentine will return. He's not been here since last year, but once again, he had more conversations with players at the Sony Open in Hawaii. And this time he talked to Kenny Perry, Stuart Sink, Zach Johnson, and a couple more about their mental game and how it influences their play. It's really good stuff. And clearly, when you drop names of guys on the tour in a podcast episode, everybody finds it. It's really, last year's show got a lot of replays. So actually, I'm going to be traveling for a non-golf vacation most of February, so I've got a lot of great shows already lined up so that we don't miss a week together. We'll talk to one of the most successful recording engineers in rock and roll history on where golf and the music business collide. He's a golf fanatic, but he's also worked with a lot of very famous rock and rollers. Has some Grammys, too. Then we're going to we'll talk to Paul Cervantes. You may have heard me mention Paul in the past because he's been an incredible resource for guests on the show. But he's got a new book coming out about the incredible story of the very first American to win the U.S. Open. And if you're a golf historian, you'll be surprised it's not Francis Ouimet. No, he won it in 1913, but J.J. McDermott won the previous 2 years and then disappeared. It's an incredible story, and Paul will share it with us. But the other reason you may have heard about Paul on this show is because he wrote The Lost Fundamental with Tony Manzoni. We're going to have an announcement that so many of you have been waiting for. I'll leave it at that. Don't forget to go to tgw.com/golfsmarter for 20% off apparel with a coupon code GOLFSMARTER at checkout. The exclusive Golf Smarter 20% off sale ends February 5th, 2019 at 11:59 p.m. Central Time. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for me, follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Golf Smarter, or just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.